we have some knowledgeable folks here to answer your questions, and I will let Bill Tilton introduce them to you. We go down the hall now to Bill Tilton and tonight's KQ Scope.
Thank you, Pat. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to KQ Scope. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a subject that I'm sure will interest many of you, the program policy here on KQRS Radio. I have two people here with me this evening, two of the major management personnel for the station, to discuss that matter with you. As you may know, this is a listener call-in program. You're invited to participate. Our number is 545-5601. Our guests this evening are Dick Poe, who's the station manager and has been for quite a number of years here on KQRS, AM and FM, and George Wuerl, who's our new chief engineer here at KQ. He comes to us by way of WCMB and WSFM in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, good evening.
Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
Been a while.
Really? I want to start out with just one or two questions of my own, and we'll be going to phone calls very rapidly. So call up and get in line. You're more than welcome. And I suppose the first question has to most logically be, what's happened and why to music programming on KQRS? The commentary I get sometimes is that it sounds like a top 40 station these days, and that isn't what some people want. How do you react to people when they come to that with you?
I get that comment a lot too, Bill. I guess I react to that by saying that it depends on what you're comparing this radio station to. The most frequent comment I get from a person, whether it be in a letter or a phone call, is that compared to X radio station. And they usually cite the leading mass appeal contemporary station in the market when they make a comparison. We are just like them, and that we sound like top 40. I usually try to point out that I don't necessarily think that what they're saying is reflecting the real comparison that they're making. I think instead, if they've been a long-time listener to this radio station, that in fact they're making a comparison to what we used to sound like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. You picked the span of time when this radio station most suited the particular taste and needs of that particular listener. And I think that's what they're saying. Compared to what we sounded like then, yes, we've moved toward the direction of top 40 if you compare it to that format, if you compare it to what top 40 is today. I say no, and I think that the ratings bear that out because they show very different listening characteristics in terms of people, ourselves compared to Station X. The other thing I would say is that the development in radio today is that two of the format descriptions or titles that are seeming to disappear from the scene is, on the one hand, top 40. This is when you're talking about contemporary radio formats. And the other is progressive. Progressive stations today are referred to as AOR in many markets.
Which means
album-oriented rock. There are a few distinct and pure freeform or progressive stations left around the country, but not in too many markets. And the top 40 stations do not refer to themselves as top 40 anymore, but they call themselves contemporary, which is always a word that's been around. But it moves away from that distinction of top 40.
And KQ characterizes itself as?
AOR.
AOR.
Right.
How about superstar rock and roll?
That's the title of the consultancy that we've been affiliated with for almost a year and a half. It is a generic term, but it's more of a floss term. The generic description would be more or less AOR.
All right. Well, all the phone lines are full. I'll tell people who are trying to call that you're going to have to wait your turn if you're not on hold just yet. And following up from what Dick Poe, the station manager, just said, I think that the listeners might have better questions than me along that line and more representative. I just want to ask one more question, and this could include, I assume, George Wuerl, our new engineer, as well. What's going to happen with KQRS? Is it going to continue going in the same direction? What kind of services is it going to offer to the community? What kind of program can people expect?
Yes, I think it'll continue going in the same direction because the objectives that we had in going in this direction are being met, and they're being met very well in terms of events that we will be involved with in the community. Yes, we'll add an event here and there. For example, looking to 1979, since we're at the end of the year. One of the major events coming up next summer is the Concert for Sharing, which is a concert that we've been associated with in some capacity or another for 4 years. It is sponsored by YES and Hennepin County Emergency Food Shelves as the two prime sponsors. We will be helping, assuming that that comes off in June of next year. The newest event that we have is the Walk for Mankind, which we became associated with last year for the first time. And the new event, which we'll be working on in July this year, so that we'll have the Walk for Mankind being in May, a May, June, July major event next summer. The July event will be something totally different. I think it'll be a lot of fun for us as well as for listeners, and that's the Sky of 10,000 Frisbees tournament, which should be a delight. It's something that's been happening here every year, but the guys who work with the Minnesota Frisbee Association have an excellent sport, which a lot of people...
These aren't laser-projected frisbees.
These are not laser-projected frisbees, no. They won't be tossed from the top of IDS. A lot of people have been getting into this sport, and we think that, you know, it'll be a fun thing to tie into next July. And as far as technical goes, I think that George can give us an update on what's happening with our pending move to IDS.
George Wirl.
Well, thank you. As far as IDS is concerned, things are moving along. In a, to fill some people in who might not be exactly up on what's happening, the IDS project is a joint venture between us and four other radio stations, all of whom will be going to share an antenna site on top of the IDS tower. Where KQRS is concerned, we'll be increasing our power to 100,000 watts. We will be increasing our antenna height from the 200 and some odd feet that we are now to well over 800 feet, the height of the IDS tower. It will be increasing our coverage area substantially, and hopefully we'll provide, you know, much, much better service to just about every community within the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. As for the time frame of this, because we are coordinating between not ourselves but four other radio stations, plus the Federal Aviation Agency, the FCC, and of course local agencies, everybody has to have the plans and pass, and of course we all as radio stations have to be in agreement. So I think we're nearing sometime early spring 1979, I would assume that we will be operational along with everybody else from IDS. Based on what we know now, we are almost to the end of the engineering studies that had to be done, obviously to make sure that nothing's going to come crashing down on top of our heads. That's the worst possible case, but for a structural standpoint. Secondly, to make sure that the stations will have the coverage areas that we all desire and why we're putting so much money into the project. But I would say look towards early to middle spring of this year, and we will all be functional from the new site.
All right, thanks. That's George Wirl, the new chief engineer here. George will be available to expand on that type of information if people are interested. And other subjects having to do with engineering, if you're somebody who likes to tape records off of the airwaves and wants to know technical information about those kind of things, George can answer some of those questions.
Also antenna placement too, Bill, if they're having some difficulty receiving FM station, whether it's this one or another one.
Right. We're going to begin taking phone calls. I'll remind people that are waiting on hold that we're on 7-second delay. We ask that you listen to your telephone where you can hear the program, and not your radio, because the radio gets very distracting. You're not always with us when we want you to be, and causes lots of confusion and waste of time. With that, we'll begin taking calls. I'll thank this individual for waiting. Go ahead. You're on KQ Scope.
Yes, thank you. I would like to direct this question towards Dick Poe, I guess. I wrote a letter about 8 months ago, and I'm just kind of interested in what percentage of letters written in are favorable towards your new program and which ones aren't. And also, if all letters are, or since you have to put out your letters for public display, are all of those letters put out? And then I have another question, too.
Yeah, first part of your question, the answer is that probably of the letters we receive, 80 to 90%, well, let's say maybe 70 to 80% would probably have unfavorable comments, either in part or in total in the letter. The remainder would be favorable. There are also letters which are neither favorable or unfavorable, but maybe just making general comments in which it's hard to perceive whether they go positive or negative. But I would say the majority of letters that we receive are not necessarily favorable to the format as it's constituted now.
He had a second part to that question. Are they all available for public inspection?
Yes, the answer to that is they are. The public file is available during business hours, Monday through Friday, for the inspection of anyone who would like to come in and look through it. Every radio and television station in this area and in the country is required to maintain such a file.
That's all of them?
Yes, okay. Yes. They are available for inspection.
Okay, and another question I have is, it seems like I've been listening to your station for a very long time, and I see your transition you're going through, but part of your programming, it seems that when you come in with an older group like The Who or somebody like that, you come in with one certain song, and you'll play that quite a bit, or the Moody Blues, for example, like The Who is My Generation, and I just wonder if you couldn't vary that music of the older groups. I think that it'd be much more pleasing to the listener if you don't hear the same music all the time. I don't like your new programming, but that's just my opinion. But thank you for giving me some time to speak my mind.
Thank you for giving us your opinion.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. And thank you for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple comments and then a couple questions. What I wanted to say was, I realize that in nowadays times and everything, to stay in existence, you gotta do what the promoters and record plants want, right? And all that's coming out nowadays is, Kiss, Foreigner, Nazareth, and if people just stop supporting those people, maybe we can work toward a better sound. Anyway, another thing is, I was wondering if repetition could be cut a little bit daily, and also, what does it take to be a ducky?
Okay, two questions. Can the repetition be cut down a bit, and what does it take to be a disc jockey?
Right.
Okay, the repetition on the station depends, of course, on the relative popularity of the cut, and that is pretty well established by the general mechanics of what we are doing here. In terms of the amount of repetition, I would have to say that generally for those cuts which are on one of the more actively played lists, that the repetition factor is approximately every 4.5 to 5 hours. I would also submit to you, first can I ask you a question, what is a favorite group of yours?
My favorite group?
Yeah.
Well, Bob Dylan.
Okay. Then I would submit to you, since you seem to be a bit irritated by Kiss and Foreigner, that if a Foreigner cut comes up, let's assume that the same cut played by Foreigner were played every 4.5 to 5 hours, it might appear to you through perspective, since you're not sitting and keeping a meticulous count of the times that it comes up, that it's coming up every 2 hours. On the other hand, if there were a particular song by Dylan that you enjoy, we might play that song every 4.5 hours, and you might think that it was less time. There's a certain amount of perspective and especially perception that's involved in the repetition of cuts. In other words, the ones you don't like seem to be being repeated much too often. The songs that you do like don't come around often enough. The second part of your question, in terms of how you get into announcing?
Right. I was wondering if you go through Brown Institute, or what do you do here?
The Brown Institute is one of the better training schools for announcers around the country. But I would have to say this. I think, first of all, what you do if you think that broadcasting is a career that you would like to be involved in is look at yourself very honestly and very directly and ask yourself if you have the qualities that are needed to be in the radio business, for example, or in broadcasting in general, but particularly in announcing, and that is that you have a tremendous desire to succeed as a radio personality, as a performer on radio, because radio is business, it's also show business, and it does require a person who has a tremendous amount of drive. Then I think you have to assess whether you feel that you have the talent to be an announcer. And there are places that can help you to some extent in doing an evaluation of that. Brown Institute is one of them. In fairness to Brown, I would say that I think that they'll give you a pretty fair idea of how you sound, but you also have to keep in mind that they are in the business to recruit people to get into broadcasting of one kind or another. And it's a little bit different if you're going to Brown to be an announcer than if you are going to Brown to become an engineer. Because engineering is a little bit, as George could probably tell you, in some ways more cut and dried. Either you've got it upstairs or you don't in terms of the basic intelligence and interest and desire to be an engineer. But in terms of announcing, there are more intangibles involved there, including your own voice quality, your own diction, your own speech patterns, your own reading ability, your own inflections, your own ability to become a personality of some sort on the air, whether it's a KQ kind of personality, a CCO-FM kind of personality, a CCO radio personality, a KEEY personality, whatever the radio station is, there's a certain general pattern of announcing that's involved. Any other question on that?
Yeah, just one more. Do you think that you'd be able to do a simulcast on sold-out concerts around the metropolitan area that people can get tickets for?
We have never given, that's kind of like the blackout rule for TV on NFL. We have never given specific consideration to that. We have given some consideration, and we have been approached recently on doing some concerts, not necessarily on the basis that they've been sold out. I would say on that basis alone, it would be a bit complicated because frequently concerts may not be sold out until the last minute. On the other hand, if it's someone like the Rolling Stones coming in, they could be sold out 4 weeks in advance. But whether you could receive clearances from the musicians, the management, the talent management, the promoter, all of the people involved, to be able to actually do even a recorded broadcast from the site, let alone a live remote, would be very difficult to answer. On the basis of the way you asked the question, I say it would be kind of difficult to do it.
How about simulcasts like with Channel 2 for specialized pre-recorded events?
Those are possible. Those we've done on at least two occasions in the past with Channel 2, one being the Mark Gatiss performance that they recorded in studio, I think it was about 2 years ago, in December or January.
Do you ever talk with them about doing that on a more regular basis?
We have not. It really kind of has to originate from them because they have the most work and the most investment involved. They have to put together the show, and the real commitment has to come from Channel 2. We have given them an open-ended statement that if you ever have something that involves music that is, you know, similar to what we do, what our thing is, that we'd like to hear about it and we'd like to consider it.
All right, I'm going to move on. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on KQ Scope.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I'm one of the people who records albums off the air. And I was just wondering how you decide to, like, make a Sidetrack Sunday and what albums to put on it, and if you're going to be doing that more in the future.
Yes, we will be doing it more. I won't say that we'll be doing it more often. The Sidetrack Sunday is a popular feature on the station, and it's probably second or third in popularity only to one other feature which really gets a lot of listener interest, and that's our mini concert weekends, in which we do just a mini concert after mini concert back to back the entire weekend. People really seem to love those. I can't tell you how they specifically decide. I think that they try to get a mix or a balance in the five albums that they put on a Sunday, because let's face it, that's our whole show. That's our whole act for that Sunday. So I think they would try to find five relatively strong albums, at least one or two or possibly three that might be classic albums from the past, and one or two or three current albums, so that there will be a certain a degree of popularity to each of the five albums, and then I think they would just try and balance out in terms of some different kinds of artists.
Okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
And thanks for waiting. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay. I was wondering, like, you call yourself the Twin Cities Album Station.
Right.
And what I see happening is that you take, like, one or two cuts off an album, and you play them over and over, and the general public really never gets a chance to hear the whole album. I was wondering what you had to say about that.
What you just said is true.
Is there any reason for it? I mean, like, you know, there's the few albums like Billy Joel and stuff like that where you do play most of the music. And, I don't know, it seems like it's not fair to a lot of the other bands.
Let me dovetail this with something that was asked earlier about can the repetition be decreased? Insofar as any one cut may not be played any more than every 4.5 hours, but there's a certain number of cuts that have a large repetition factor involved. Therefore, you seem to be hearing a small group of songs regularly over the radio. I think that is partly the result of taking just one or two cuts from each album.
Right.
Is that absolutely necessary?
It is if we want what we're doing to work. The album cuts that we select sometimes will be one album, one cut from an album. Sometimes it'll be two, sometimes it'll be three. If you've ever bought an album, and I have, and I've listened to many albums, I find usually that there generally are one or two or three cuts, maybe four, maybe five, on an album that I like tremendously, and everything else is so-so. I can think of one album which I purchased recently in the last year to 2 years, and this is not to say that there haven't been others, but this is one that stands out in my mind, in which I found just about every cut on the album was excellent. And I think that we have played a wide variety of cuts on this album, but it wasn't because it's my choice. It's because there must be a lot of other people that agree with me, and that was the ELO album, New World Record, in which there are quite a few. The album has a depth of cuts that all have a very pleasing sound to them, a popular sound to them, and to me personally. But there are albums in which there are only one or two or three cuts. And through the research that we do, that our program consultants do, we are able to determine which of the album cuts are going to be those that a lot of people are going to like, and they're going to be tune-in cuts, and which of the cuts from an album are going to be those which are not going to relate to too many people, and which are going to be tune-out cuts.
That's what you were talking about a second ago. If we want what we're trying to do to work, talking about market share,
right.
Most people listen
right.
to these cuts.
Right.
That's
this
what gets
is as
the people.
Determined, as determined by research, right.